minute.
This week on the House of Static, New Jersey original, singer, songwriter, and indie veteran, Downtown Mystic, a.k.a. Robert Allen.
Would you like to introduce our
guest? Yeah, there you go. So, welcome to House of Static. I'm Bob Smith. That's Kilo House. And our guest today is Mr. Robert Allen, otherwise known as the Downtown Mystic, or just Downtown Mystic. As we all do, he's got his... His stage name, his brand name. So that's the Downtown Mystic. And as we were just discussing before I introduced the show, or before Kilo introduced the show, is that Robert and I have been, half the guests that we've met so far in the show, since we started here. Robert, I know from my blog. So I've written about Robert's music, I don't know, probably a dozen times at this point, probably quite a bit, probably about 8 or 10 articles, different albums and singles.
It's like 2 or 3 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's been a lot of fun, we just sort of become part of each other's process here, which is kind of cool. But anyway, so Robert, we started this podcast in January, and just really for the sake of exactly what we're doing here, to kind of connect with some of the folks we've worked with and met and just kind of, dealt with over the years. So welcome.
Yeah. Thank you. Good to be here. Good to meet you guys. All right. Good to put a face to all the words. You do great work.
Well, thank you very much, sir. As do you.
Yes, he does.
Right on. So anyway, and Robert, this is Kilo. Kilo House is a producer in LA and my co-host and my good friend. Kilo and I make a lot of music together. We just have a lot of projects that we're working on, including this little podcast here.
Yes.
So, and Kilo is in Los Angeles. I'm in upstate New York. And Robert is in New Jersey, my original home state. I don't know if I ever told you that, but I was born in Englewood. So,
oh, I'm going there tomorrow.
All right, right on. So say hello to the folks, Robert. Introduce yourself. Where are you in New Jersey right now?
I am in, I recently moved. I was in North Jersey for over 40 years, about 25 miles northwest of Midtown Manhattan. And we moved a year ago. Just had the anniversary on 420. 1 year in the house here in Sunny Toms River, which is the shore area.
Oh, yeah.
So North Jersey, we say down the shore, we mean it's like Seaside Heights, Lavalette, New Jersey. In this area, if they said down the shore, they'd probably be talking about, Long Beach Island, which is the next thing down.
Right on.
And we're kind of really like centralized Jersey.
I don't think people really realize what Jersey is like, right? Because people that don't live in New York and New Jersey have an image of Jersey as being either the Jersey Shore TV show.
Exactly.
Yeah, ridiculous TV show or just the sort of urban bedroom community that is just over the George Washington Bridge. You know what I mean? Which is where I said I was from Englewood.
What is a bedroom community, bro?
Bedroom community is like, that's where people live in a big city like New York City.
Oh,
bedroom
right.
Committees. So people live in the bedroom communities and they work in the city. That's the idea. So
I'm a half hour from Neptune, New Jersey, native son, Jack Nicholson's birthday today.
Yeah, oh, there you go. Rock on. Right. Yeah. So what I was saying, the Jersey Shore is most of Jersey gorgeous. I mean, there's a good reason it's called the Garden State, because it's a really beautiful place. And the Jersey Shore is fantastic. It's a bunch of little towns all along the shore. You just kind of walk along and you're like in a different town, I'm in Point Pleasant now, and then Lavalette, blah, blah, blah. You just kind of keep going down. But it's just beautiful. Boardwalk for miles and miles. It's really nice. So
the summer place to be.
It really is. It's pretty great. You don't want to try to drive there in the summertime.
I don't want to try to drive there anytime because I'm so far away. Yeah. But any time of the year.
So, and we don't always talk this much about where somebody's from, but in the case,
but it's an interesting thing because I'm originally from New Hampshire and I know nothing about Jersey at all.
Right. 0%. Right.
I thought it was all like weird girls that whatever. I'm not going to talk about. Anyway.
Well,
whoa.
Sorry.
Wow.
I lost my voice there. So anyway, the reason I'm talking so much about Jersey, though, is because Robert's from there, but also because you're not just from there, Robert. I mean, Jersey is like in your blood, right? I mean, and the music and the music scene in Jersey is legendary. I mean, you got your obviously the Bruce Springsteens and Bon Jovi's and but there's, you know, tons, so many others. So
yeah, the 60s and 70s into the probably mid 80s, you know, was really a happening musical place.
And you were right there in it.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. Always a part of it. And yeah, no, it's crazy how many things happen at times that you least expect it.
That's awesome. And so how'd you get started? And like when? I mean, I can tell folks, I know you've been playing in various bands and such. You've been doing Downtown Mystic I'll ask.
It's got 20 years now. Yeah. What I started, it was like everybody else that saw the Beatles in the 60s. It started the craze, you know, from Springsteen, Miami Steve will tell you the exact same thing, Tom Petty. You know, it just started what became the second coming of rock and roll.
Right.
And it's just spawned an industry that everybody wanted to be part of, you know, just bands in their basements and garages and all over the place. And then the 70s, I mean, you could play 24/7 in clubs all up and down in Jersey.
That's awesome.
Very big musical club scene. And then kind of towards the shore, it goes in waves, you know, it's happening for a few years and then it goes out of style and then it comes back. That's kind of what happened with Asbury Park. It was like a rejuvenation of it in the late from the mid to late 70s.
There's a pretty hip scene in Asbury Park now.
Well, it's pretty much stayed that way. It's been really built up over the last 5 to 10 years.
Right.
So the whole boardwalk and beach there is like totally reborn again.
Yeah, there's some again in the block. You know, I've got a number of like artists from that from the shore, and especially from Asbury Park, that are just, you know, kind of hipster, cool, groovy alternative rockers that are doing some neat things. It's fun.
Yeah. So
did you always know you wanted to focus on making music? Like, was that always a plan, or did you think it was like just a side?
You know what? It was always music from the time I can remember. It was always around in the house, and you know, really, when I was even 5-6 years old, playing with my friends, I would have them, you know, sing background parts to current things.
Right.
And I was always into music. And then, like I said, once the Beatles came, it was like, there was no, that was it. That was like the atom bomb going off. You were either in or out, and most people were in.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
You know, the difference, right, between like your story and, you know, every other teenager from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, whatever, right? And the difference with our stories too is that we kind of stuck with it, right? We're still so
right.
You know, and I me as well, right? So like I'm 50 something years old. I just turned 52. And some of my friends are accountants, some are doctors, and some are bass players, you know what I mean? But, you know, and there's something in the brain that just makes some folks go, nah, I'm just going to keep going with this. And you're one of those guys. Like, so you've had this successful independent music career going for, you know, decades now. And it's impressive. I mean, you've got songs licensed all over the place. You got records. You've been hanging out with rock stars.
It's crazy because it wasn't until the digital age that all that happened for me. And like to be a musician today, I mean, I look around and I go, yeah, I wonder how many kids are going to want to be forming bands,
right?
You know, in the upcoming days, you know, who's playing instruments anymore? Who's, you know, but at a time, it's like you couldn't ask for a better time to start because you have so many things at your fingertips now that,
yeah,
I mean, I had to spend 20, 30 years to get that experience.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I can. Well, I can tell you, especially working with Kilo, and Kilo, you could kind of fill in more on this, but what I've learned, because I'm like you, right? So I've been in bands my whole life, and I played in bars for decades, and you know, and that's the world I know. And the same thing, you think like how, you know, these, you know, are young kids starting bands anymore? Are they going and playing in bars? Are they doing those things? And not really.
Absolutely.
You know, but they are, no. They are, right. But they're doing it differently. You know, it's just a different thing now. And that's kind of what I've learned doing the blog and working with Kilo and everything is that, you know, like I, in the 80s, I'd start a band and I'd be like, I'm going to start a metal band, or I'm going to start a new wave band, or I'm going to do this kind of music. And you're all in on that style of music, right? It's just not like that at all. Now people are just like, I'm going to make some music and we'll call it right. something when we're done. you right. know, and that's cool. So, yeah. So what do you, I mean, what's your take on that, Kilo? What do you think about
it? I mean, I had a good friend at Icon back when I was going to school there. Explain that to me, that music was going to merge into this kind of melting pot of every genre mixed together right. type of thing. And I, as a young person, scoffed at him like, yeah, that's never going to happen. Well, it did happen.
Yeah,
it is happening now. It's going to continue happening until music doesn't need a genre anymore. It's just music is the genre, you know? So I think that's good, because you don't have to kind of pigeonhole yourself, or whatever the term is, into right. like one specific thing. It's still smart when you're starting out to have a brand,
sure,
or you focus more on one thing, you know, but once people know your sound, then they're accepting of, like, for instance, we just released Retribalized, which does not sound like me necessarily at all, but it's still, people will listen to it from my fan base, because it still has like the voice clips and stuff. So right, it's right. like, but I like that music has turned into this thing where it's like, who fucking cares what I'm writing today?
right like, on, man.
We write music nowadays that doesn't have a genre and may never have a genre, because by the time it does, there won't be a genre.
Yeah.
You know?
But then on the flip side of it, I think that the way the music industry has changed is that those that are working in specific genres, those genres themselves have kind of developed into these bubble industries unto themselves. You know what I mean? Like, more so than just like when, for instance, you know, we're growing up, like everybody watched the same TV shows. Everybody knew the same hit right. songs. Everybody knew everything. Right. But because we all did the same stuff, and there were three channels on TV, and that's just what we do. You know, there were four radio right. stations that you listened to. But now people that like Robert is a roots rocker, right? He's playing like, and right. he's doing a lot of original stuff, but it's in a style that is, it's very intentionally retro style, like a roots kind of rock, right. 60s, 70s driven rock and roll, and 50s sometimes too. And that's a world unto itself. And there are fans, you know, Robert's got thousands and thousands of fans that are right. listening to that style of music. And I just think it's really interesting how the, right. how the, I was just going to say, Robert, as you know, what do you, what's your take on that, Robert?
I agree with Kilo in a way. I think it is kind of like an anything goes kind of situation today, because, I mean, look, I put out, at the end of last year, I put out this thing called Downtown Demos, which were, tracks that I did with a couple guys that were just doing beats.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah, was no drum. You know, it was a very different thing for me. And here I am doing a roots kind of thing with their backing. And then all of a sudden it's like I got, you know, like 100,000 new listeners on Spotify that I would never have had before.
Yeah, it's a cool right. record too. It is. It's good. Right. It's a neat record. So that's groovy, man. And that's awesome. Go ahead.
I think that we need to clarify for people that to make it in music, you don't have to do everything. I'm not saying that. When I said that, I want to make sure our listeners that are listening that want to start doing music don't feel like they need to like just be like, I'm going to do every kind of music. Like, do what, right, what makes you happy. But what I was saying was, music these days has turned into what I just said, which is do what makes you happy, meaning he enjoyed doing that with the hip hop guys or whatever. And so he did that rather than going, right. Putting an image on himself.
Right.
So, yeah, I just wanted to clarify it so people don't take that and go, well, fuck, now I have to learn every genre. No, just do what comes out of you.
Well, Rob, the other thing is he said something about making it. What is making it today?
Exactly. That is also a very good, very, very good question.
But see, the thing I think that's good. But that's I like that about the music industry. I like all of these things we're talking. I worked in the business 20 years ago with major record labels, and it was awful business. I mean, it was just terrible. I was working like with the president's labels, right? And they're it was a nasty business, and it was impossible to get into. And the ones that did get into it, half the time regretted that they were there, you know. Right. And so, yeah, it's the definition of making it right is very amorphous now, but right. I think that's a good thing. You know, you can create.
I mean, it definitely is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can give you my take and my answer of your question if you want. I think making it is a very personal thing. So to every individual, making it looks different, right? To me, making it was being on Spotify, which is very easy to do nowadays. But when I started doing music, it was not. So to me, that was making it. So when I said making it, it's whatever that person is envisioning as like, oh my God, it would just be amazing. If, like when I wanted to DJ a festival, like I never thought that was possible, which I did. And I've done and stuff. But like, to me, that was like, if I can do these things, those two very simple things to me that I can do anytime I want now was making it. So I think it is metamorphic, Bob, like where it just kind of changes throughout your career, you know, as long as you never settle and keep growing.
Well, my personal motto of making is success is how you define it.
Exactly. That's exactly. It's a way less wordy thing than what I said, but meaning the same thing.
Just start using that. Well, then the obvious question at that point then, Robert, is how do you define success as a musician?
I think exactly what Kilo was saying. You set kind of goals for yourself, like, you know, because I started like you, being in bands, and then I decided that I'd rather concentrate on my songwriting and recording and producing. So I stopped doing all that. And then as I got older, it was like, oh, well, I'm going to start a publishing company. And then people start saying, oh, you know, have you ever thought about managing? So I started managing people. I started managing bands. And I, you know, My goals would change. The success became something different for me. But I would tell the bands, it's like, look, I had a band that we did they were like a cross between, you know, Green Day meets Foo Fighters, called The Discontent. And they really were where Green Day would go. They were there before Green Day had their big success the second time around. Right. And so in the mid-90s, you know, there's this, everybody's talking about grunge and all and punk and rock. And yet the major labels aren't touching it. Right. They're not, even though Kurt Cobain is dead, Nirvana's still the biggest band around, but nobody's signing anything like it. It's crazy. Yeah. So I put a record out in 96. I started up my Shala Records with them. Nothing happened. 5 years later, I now go to the radio was changing so dramatically that the only new music could be heard on specialty shows. Oh, yeah. And I got this band. I put out a track of theirs from 96. I put it out in 2000, 5 years later in 2001. And the thing goes top five at all the specialty shows.
Nice. That's awesome.
And the band doesn't understand it. It's like I said, first of all, here's success. Do you know how many CDs come across a program and music director's desk every day? So to me, success is that they actually took your CD out of the mail, opened it, and listened to the friggin' thing, and within 2 days, put it on a show on the radio. To me, that is like huge success.
I agree.
And they didn't understand that.
Yeah. it's a good, well, because, you know, like you said, like it's about how you define the success. So like for instance, a similar story, right? I have, because you're right, you can't get in the radio, you can't get on, which is funny because nobody, radio is almost dead, but still it's impossible to get on it. You know what I mean? It's just the craziest thing. But I got, but it did get a song that one of my songs that Kilo produced called High and Dry that we got on Sirius XM. And I got it on specialty shows first, and then they started playing it a little bit on that. It's actually on the Jersey on Little Steven's channel, you know, Little Steven's Underground Garage. So they played the song in there. Anyway, the point is that I you're right. Like that once I found it, because I knew I got it on the specialty show, but then like, when I got a royalty check, and granted it's not a big one, but I got paid like $20, and I was like, what the hell is this for? I didn't, you know what I mean? I didn't know.
What did I do?
Exactly. What did I get a $20 royalty check for? And then I looked into it. And I, hey, they've been playing my song, and that was a goal I'd had my whole life, really, to get a regular rotation and get royalties from being on a regular rotation on a radio station. So that was success, and I loved it. It made me very happy.
Yeah, success for me is I realized that at my age, you know, I'm not going to be competing with the Reckless Kellys of the world.
Right.
You know? So it's like, for me, success is, hey, I can go record a song and I can put it out, and people like yourself are going to write about it. It's going to get played on Spotify. It may get picked up and get put into a TV show. So it's just like, right, I know that I can create a song, put it out, and I know people are going to hear it. And to me, that is the very definition of success. Because mm-hmm. for so long, you know, I spent 20 years where you'd go in the studio, you record something, and then you had to send it to an A&R guy at a recording company. And if they right. didn't pick it up, nobody ever heard of you again.
Yeah. Right.
That's right.
Right.
So, you know, we should talk about a couple of those recent successes of yours, by the way, because you kind of touched on them there a little bit. As we mentioned, you know, multiple times, you're from Jersey, you're in Jersey, you're very much Jersey. And that isn't just, you're just in proximity with some of those famous rock stars that are right. from Jersey. You know them. And you actually had an album last year, a couple years
ago.
Yeah. Right. Downtown Mystic on East Street or whatever, right? And you had, so Robert had the bass player, Gary Talent, and the drummer, Max Weinberg, from Bruce's East Street Band. And I mean, I just said that very calmly, but I mean, those are, they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, these guys. I mean, right. they're one of the most famous rhythm sections that's ever played together, and they were on your album.
And one of the really weird things about that is, in looking at their track records, I mean, Max and Gary individually have done hundreds of sessions with other artists.
Right.
But as a unit, they are the rhythm section for the E Street Band, which backs Bruce Springsteen, and they were on retainer for Bruce. So if you were, when I was working with them, if Bruce called them and said, hey, listen, I got to go, you got to be in the studio tomorrow, no matter what they were doing, they dropped it and they were in the studio with Bruce. And you had to be cool with that.
Well, let me tell you, if Bruce called me up right now and said, I need you in the studio, I'd be there. Right.
But looking at outside of Bruce Springsteen, backing Bruce Springsteen, they recorded together on the first Ian Hunter album after you left Mott the Hoople. They backed Ronnie Spector. They did Gary U.S. Bonds things. This is really, you know, early 80s. And then maybe one or two other things, but those one or two other things are me. So really, on one hand, you could say this is how many artists they have backed together as the rhythm section.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And they did your whole, they would like to play on a whole album. I mean, you didn't just get them in for one song. It's a whole bunch of tunes. Really very cool. How'd that happen? I mean, did you know
them? Oddly enough, I met Gary in New York.
That's funny. Not in New Jersey.
If you wanted to get signed, you had to, New Jersey was the cover band capital of the world. And the Asbury scene wasn't happening yet. So you had to go to New York. You played CBGBs, you know, you would, the Bitter End, you know, those kind of clubs in the Village. And then there were some upper East Side and West Side clubs. There was a very small bar on the on First Avenue and 76th Street called JP's. And the very next block was Catch a Rising Star. Mm-hmm. But JP's was a hangout for the music industry. So, I mean, hanging out there on any given night, I mean, I saw Mick Jagger, I saw Billy Joel, I saw Bill Murray. You met all these kind of people, James Taylor, all these people were hanging out. So it was, we would go there with the very idea of like,
meeting some rock stars.
This is the place to be. Right. And also there were music industry people that were hanging out there. Right. So we had done a single, an actual 45 vinyl. And this is like towards the end of 1979. And I, you know what, we're playing there at one weekend. And I said, I'm just going to put the 45s on tables. And
oh, that's a cool idea.
Just so that's what I did. And at the end of the night, the waitress comes up to me. I knew Chris, and she says, "Oh, can I have one of your singles for my boyfriend?" I said, "Yeah." And I reach in the pack, I give to her, and almost as a second, just as an afterthought, I said, "Oh, by the way, who's your boyfriend?" She goes, "Oh, Gary Talon." From the Yankee band? She goes, "Yeah." Next time we play there, she goes, "Oh, Gary loved your record. He wants to meet you."
That's awesome. What a cool story. It's hilarious that you guys are from basically the same town. And
you meet somewhere else,
you meet in New York City.
That's crazy.
I went to high school with Max. Max is a year older than me.
That's excellent, man. And Max Weinberg is, and people would know, he was, what was he on? Was he the band leader for Conan?
O'Brien.
What's Conan O'Brien, right? Yeah. That's awesome. Is he still? He's not still, is he? I don't know.
No, he's not. But he still has he left there with what he called the Max Weinberg 7. And he still does shows.
Right. Yep. That's excellent. That's awesome.
So also you talked about go ahead, Bob.
No, go ahead. I didn't know.
Oh, I was just going to say, you also talked about some of your songs being picked up by like TV shows and stuff like that. Can you kind of explain to our listeners like how that happens? Did they approach you and say like, we want to put your shit in this? Or,
you know, again, it was just, I think today it's as important as a musician that you really have to invest in yourself.
Right.
You know, when we were coming up, it was just like, yeah, your musicians just like, yeah, we play, we practice, we go and we play, you know, we write songs, we may go record them and all, but you know, you were looking for managers, you were looking for other people to tell you.
You just wanted to go have some fun, you know?
Nobody knew what the music industry. The whole idea was like, we got to get a record deal. What's a record deal? We have no idea. But everybody, you know, that was the goal. Today, you have all these avenues. So sync licensing didn't really come into vogue until like around 2008, 2009. Mm-hmm. And I could kick myself because I had done an album and put the album out. And then the next year I did another album, but this time I had heard about sync licensing and they like instrumental. So after you do a mix of your track with the vocals, just mute all the vocals and redo it. And now you have two tracks. One's an instrumental mix and one's your regular mix.
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, it's the instrumental mix that's going to get put on TV.
Yeah, but so what was the
what I was doing was they're still around, Sonic Bids.
Oh, Sonic Bids. Okay, that's so what I was because I've used other
Sonic
ones.
Bids had just started, and there were those things like you could actually they would put up if you're not familiar with Sonic Bids, it's like I want to get the radio play or I want to get a review, and you can opt into these different things. I want to DJ a festival. You know, they have opportunities for that kind of thing. So there was this guy that was looking to start a music library for a new company it was called Jingle Punks, which I didn't know. So this is 2009. I submit a song, and of course, typical Sonic Bids fashion, a month later, I get a notice that, oh, your song's been picked up.
Right.
So now I got to go and I'm like, can I still send this to you? And the guy's, yeah, send it to me. No problem. So Jingle Punks was just starting. And Jingle Punks today is probably the biggest supplier of music to all the TV shows, you know, Pawnbrokers, American Pickers. You know, anything you can see that's on A&E or the History Channel, they pretty much. So I got in kind of on the ground floor in a way.
That's cool.
That's awesome. That's
very
man.
Cool.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah. And Kilo's asking because, you know, we want to know too. We're making these songs too. You know, we're trying to do it. Because I've tried a bunch of them. I tried like SoundTraders.
Singlebumps.com. They're always listening. The only thing now is like at the time, you could be non-exclusive, which meant that if I submitted a song to Jingle Punks, I could take the same song and submit it to another company and take the same song and go to a third or a fourth company. And there was no problem. Today, they want to, you know, if they're going to take a song of yours, you're going to have to go for exclusivity for at least a year.
Yeah.
So you know, the whole thing has changed.
It has.
Even that has changed dramatically.
It has. And it is tough to get a gig. I've tried a couple of different websites that do these things, SongTrader, and which I've not had any success with. I'll be honest. I've never picked up anything with SongTrader and a couple other ones. But yeah, I'm going to, you know, I haven't even thought about SonicBids. I mean, I just always thought of SonicBids as like an EPK site and that was it. But I didn't realize that they were that involved. You know, they had all the connections to.
Yeah, they had all different kind of opportunities. You know, if your band wanted to play, for gigs, for touring,
right,
all kinds of stuff. I assume that they still have, but I haven't really done anything with them probably in, 10 years. But
right on. Well,
I'm sure it's evolved way, way far past that now. It's probably an even better company at this point.
Yeah.
More efficient. Wow. So this far into your career, how do you stay inspired? I've been wondering this whole time because inspiration is a thing that like you have to kind of find, some people think, or you kind of force your way into being inspired by doing drugs or whatever you do. How do you stay inspired this far into my future, friend?
You know, when I was younger, I was always, my main inspiration was listening to new music. I sought out, if you saw my record collection, from the Beatles to the Stones to Zeppelin to, all the major, there were no undergrads in those days.
Right,
everybody became major. So, you were always looking for, Hendrix just is putting out a new album. It's like, I got to hear this, So Tom Petty was putting out, Springsteen, all these guys, is like, what's their latest record sound like? So that to me is always was my inspiration for
music inspires music.
Hear something, go, oh God, I got to write something like that,
Right.
Today it's a little harder because I'm older, but I also have the, what inspires me is the fact that, well, there's songs that, I've, over the years, just fell by the wayside. And it's kind of like I'm doing that now with a bunch of songs that it's like, I never thought about these songs when I wrote them. And
that's funny. I'm smiling because I'm doing literally the same thing. So because Keel and I write a bunch of new music together, but I've got 500 original songs that I've written over the last 30 years. So I've been gradually, every once in a while, I re-record them. And, Kilo mix and master it, and then I'll put it out because I got this little small deal with the German label that I can put songs out. So I'm doing exactly the same thing. I'm just picking up these old songs. That one was pretty good. I'm going to re-record that. And I
we just finished one 2 days ago.
That's right.
Yeah.
So that's fun.
That's very cool. It's funny you say music because Bob and our listeners will definitely say this is true. I've always said I'm not inspired by music at all. I'm inspired by movies. So I don't get inspired by listening to other artists. But anytime I see a movie or a YouTube thing that's kind of cool, I suddenly have this weird thing where I'm like, I got to write a song right now. And it has nothing to do with the sound necessarily, but it's like, because it's the mood, synesthesia, I kind of, music is a visual thing to me anyway. So it's like, I'm not inspired by music at all, even though I listen to it all the time. Both me and Bob get to hear new music all the time. So that's cool. But it's like, it's cool to see that there are people that are inspired by music.
Right.
I'm just not used to that,
That's funny.
Very cool.
That's cool. So what do you got planned for next? What's next, Robert?
Well, I've been, for the first time in like 4 years, I'm back in the studio, and I actually went back to where I am. It was like, in January, I put out this thing called Rock and Roll, 21st Century Rock and Roll.
Right on.
Which was really my idea of like, this is my point of view on rock and roll at this point in time. Because I don't hear it. I don't even know where the bar is. You know, like I said, there used to be, you know, Springsteen or Petty or somebody would put out a record and you'd go like, oh, that's the way, you know.
That's where rock and roll is right now.
Everybody would go. We kind of go towards that and be listening to it. Today, it's like, I have no idea where the bar is. So I think, you know, I'm going to make my own.
That's fantastic. That's it. But, so, you know, that's the answer.
With that coming out, it was like, you know, now I'm only a half hour from Long Branch, and the studio in Long Branch is Shorefire Studios. That's where I recorded with Gary and Max. And I haven't been there for a while because Gary sold his interest. And once he sold, I never went back. So it's like discovering a whole new studio again, because my engineer died a couple of years ago and the studio was sold. And that's another thing, studios, you know, just where are they going? I mean, it's amazing the... I look at when I was mixing the last album, the guy was saying, he goes, I wonder what people are going to do with this, you know, and he's looking at a board with, you know, 24 inputs and it's crazy. It is.
And, you know, and I've spent a lot of time behind big boards like that, you know, and a lot of many hundreds of hours in recording studios, recording to big 2-inch tape and I don't, you know, and now this is my studio. I mean, this is just a bedroom in my house.
I mean, really good to use them. I mean, I learned how to use them in my schooling, and I do say, if you have the opportunity to use them, please use the big deck, because it makes it. There's just a different quality of the music.
Oh my God,
you use real compressors, not a compressor in your computer, like. It's just a different sound completely.
Oh, yeah.
Well, going back to Shorefire, it turns out that, you know, one of the reasons I was always not willing to go back, because they had this MCI board in there originally, which wasn't a great board. But the new owner, Joe DeMeo, when he came in, he was a big fan of all the English rock stuff from, you know, late 60s and 70s. And the board that was at Olympic Studios, where the Stones and the Beatles and Zeppelin all cut their albums, was this board called Helios. It was kind of got replaced by SSL, but the Helios board was the board that was in Apple Studios.
Right.
So for a guy like me that does retro classic sounding stuff, you know, it's like being a kid in the candy store.
Yeah, that's excellent. Right.
Absolutely,
That's fantastic. Yeah, there's nothing like recording on analog. I mean, there really isn't. It's just beautiful.
Absolutely,
it's fantastic.
It's so true.
So I've been recording since January, and I've got. I'm going to send it to you. The new track is called "Fly." It's going to be my first single that goes to radio on May 9th, and it's part of that session I did with the hip hop guys. It was kind of like just. I was up in New Hampshire. The guy says, I can get a free studio, SSL boy with a free studio. I go up to New Hampshire. There's like, I don't know, 100 acres in the middle of nowhere. Right. And for like 3 or 4 days, we're just in the studio smoking and going berserk. Anything you want to do.
That's fantastic.
That's great, dude.
And it was like I had something like 15 ideas. And this was one of the last ones I did. And it was like, I'm going to write a song about that, and finally recorded it. And so I recorded it in January, mixed it a couple of weeks ago, and it's coming out next month.
Rock on,
very
man.
Cool. Hey, very cool.
I have one question. I'm just picking your brain again, honestly, but you mentioned it's going to, you said when you release the song, it's going to go to radio. Are you working like with independent radio promoters, or are you just
Well,
the stations yourself?
I have distribution through The Orchard, and one of the things that they had a digital promoter, and it's called iPluggers.
Oh, I've heard of that. Yeah.
And iPluggers is you can submit a single, you can submit an album, and they'll they 20,000 stations they got, and you know, you pick your genre, and they mail out the emails. I get airplay in average. I average airplay in at least 20 countries around the world.
That's awesome. I've taken more than any interview we've done, Robert. I have taken a handful of notes here. I'm going to Jingle Punks. I'm going to iPluggers.
Listening is probably taking notes as well.
Yeah, yeah, really. Yeah,
yeah. Go to Marvin at iPluggers. Tell him Robert Allen sent.
I will do that, man. Rock on. All right. Well, so
usually we end our show. I think you probably saw this in your email, but everyone that's watching knows it. We end it by doing a kind of a round robin of question asking, I guess you could call it. So one of us, which is going to be Bob this week, is going to ask an industry related question. Then I'm going to ask a random personal, just random whatever question. And then you have to ask a question, but we all have to answer our own question.
Yeah, everybody answers each question.
All three of us are going to answer it. So meaning don't ask something you don't want to have to answer. Yeah, that's why we make it like that. So one of us doesn't make up a fucked up question.
Yeah. What's the most embarrassing thing you've ever done?
Like, because then you're going to have to put it out there too. So we're going to do that now. So, Bob, go ahead. You go first.
All right. Sure. Yeah. Okay. So, this goes right in line with what we were talking about, too, which is cool. So, I was thinking about this about myself. And then, you know, you have, like me, have been writing songs for a very long time. So, do you remember what was the first song you wrote?
Oh, yeah.
What was it? What was the first?
I Don't Care.
Oh, nice. Rock on.
It was, I just had learned a C progression on guitar. So I put all my knowledge to work on one song. Yeah.
Very nice. Very nice.
That's awesome.
So, Kilo, what's your answer?
Are you asking like this kind of music or like the first thing I wrote?
As I always say, the question is open to interpretation. I know. What do you consider your first song?
Well, the first song I wrote in EDM world was called Happiness, and it took me doing it for a while and then getting super stoned one night on mistake, and then I wrote the rest of the song. And then before that, my first song I wrote with a band was called I Cry, which is kind of funny because one of them sounds sad. It was like an emo-y punk band, so that's what it was called. So it's kind of like I had one that's a really happy
Happiness
song,
and I Cry.
Both of them were happy songs, but
they
have dual names. So yeah, that's my answer.
Well, cool.
Okay, now my turn to ask a question.
My answer would be it would depend on what you call the song, I guess, but probably what I would call the song. The first time I wrote something that would legitimately be a song was really three instrumentals that I did in high school with a couple of my buddies, my buddy Matto, the drummer, and Todd, still my best friend, the bass player that I play with now. And there were three instrumentals. They were called Meat and Potatoes, Can You Juggle? Meat and Potatoes, Can You Juggle? And Dueling Dillweed. And there you go. Those were first songs.
That's a very interesting.
They were surprisingly good for how stupid the titles were. They were actually pretty good. So anyway, there you go. That's my question. We'll go with Kilo, and then Robert, you'll ask the last question. How about that?
Okay. My question is, what is one activity that you do in your everyday life that people probably would not think you do? Because you're a musician or whatever, you know, you can interpret it however you want, but I assume it's because of music or your age or who knows.
Right. That's a good question. What do you do that people wouldn't expect you to do?
Yeah.
It's a tough question.
Well, I have lots of limitations that that I don't. So I don't think we told Robert that I'm in a wheelchair.
Kilo's in a wheelchair.
Yeah, it's a scooter cart fun thing. So that's why I asked it, because it's like I was looking over here at something I do that people don't think I do or would do. So that's why I came.
All right. Well, I'll answer while Robert thinks. How about I'll say that the thing that I do that people would that is insane and people
say, sure, that's even better. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Well, you already know this, Kilo, because you posted the video. So I live in an old house.
Oh yes.
I live in this old 200-year-old house in upstate New York, and I've got like 10 acres of land behind me. There's all kinds of animals and everything that live around here, and I've got this old chicken coop in my backyard that is like 200 years old, and in it lives a possum. So I've got a possum living in my chicken coop in the back. So every day I go out and put some cat food in a bin so that the possum and his raccoon friends that come and hang out can have a snack at night. So that's what I do every day. That is insane. And no one would expect that. So rock on. All right. Okay, well, so Robert, what about you?
I feel like I can think of that. Maybe people, I don't know. But I try to walk every day. Get out the fresh air and walk and clear my head and think of things to do. And
that's cool.
Right on, man.
You know,
that's a less crazy answer than anything I said.
You're like,
I guess a lot of people do it though.
Yeah, sure.
Except for me.
Yeah, that's a good point. So what was your answer, Kilo?
My smart assery wants to say drive a car with my feet because everyone fucking asks me, how do you drive a car? And I'm like, how do you drive a car? Right? That's not my answer. Just now everyone knows that we got that out of the way. Actually, I like skateboarding. So I do like downhill longboarding, like fast as fuck on my knees. Like, I'm not going to explain exactly how it works, but I do that. And no one would think I do something like that.
No, you know, I didn't know you
like
did that.
See this dude that like is in a wheelchair that you don't know can like stand up if they need to and stuff, and you're like, oh, he probably does nothing fun.
Right.
I do all of the fun things. But that's what I was looking at. My longboard's like right in my studio right over there. So I was like looking at it, I was like, that's a great question. So,
there you go.
There we go.
All right.
Okay. Now now he has to ask a question.
Yes. Robert.
You know, I've been trying to get my brain around. So the only thing, I'm wearing this hat that says the Beatles. And just because of, you know, the Get Back special and all, what is it about the Beatles that makes them so timeless?
Oh, I have a great answer.
Go ahead.
Their producer,
George
their
Martin,
producer did such a good fucking job that even people like me are trying to recreate that amazingness that he put into those records. That's just my opinion.
Oh, wow.
I could be wrong, but like, I love that producer's one of my inspirations. Every time I work on shit, even if it's nothing like the Beatles, I still want to do something that is A, that high quality, but also he experimented with shit that they weren't doing, like panning hi-hats all the way to the right.
Oh,
like
just doing like weird George shit. Absolutely.
So, I mean, that's just my opinion, but I think it does have to do with how amazing he did, because I don't know if they would have been as good a band if they had just like a rinky-dink producer that didn't get everything right and the quality out of them that they needed.
Right.
Well, I think you're right, and I'll follow up my answer basically just be an addendum to that, because I think that what made the Beatles special was all of them and the producer together. Like you couldn't have the White Album or Sergeant Pepper's if you didn't have George Martin, Paul McCartney, John Lennon.
Right.
You know, I mean, you just had to have like that all three are integral to that formula. And granted, I mean, I'm not to diss Ringo or George, but you could do it without them. you couldn't do it without John and George, but you could. I think anyway. But, and I think that the songwriting, like the sort of yin yang of Lennon McCartney is just one of the most unique and beautiful things in pop music ever. And because you got the heart of John Lennon, which is, you know, massive, and just the he's a philosopher and a poet and just a beautiful, beautiful mind. And then, you know, just the insane pop abilities of Paul McCartney. I mean, he can write a melody in his sleep that he did and does. And, you know, he's the most successful songwriter of all time for damn good reason. You know what I mean? So, I think it's the formula of the three geniuses together, you know?
Awesome. So yeah, what about you?
To me, it's like there's something about them that talking about what Kilo's getting to about sound, the sound of their records. And when you're in the studio, and I work with the drummer I work with is Steve Holly. And Steve Holly was the last drummer for McCartney and Wings when he got busted in Japan.
Wow.
So, you know, he's recorded with McCartney at the Abbey Road and all, and he has all these stories. He comes in, he's got this tambourine, and he says, yeah, I went in the closet one day and I picked this tambourine up, and you're hearing it, and you're going, that's the tambourine Ringo's playing on Day Tripper, and we can work it out. You know, you just go to this place.
It's amazing. That,
and there's like, when you're in the studio when and the Beatles come up, it's like reverenced. It's like this. Right. They're like the holy grail of recording.
They are. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Sergeant Pepper's was done on a 4-track. I mean, that's that was remarkable. I mean, I spent years working on a 4-track, and I'm proud of some of the stuff I did on 4-track. And I was real glad when everything went digital and I didn't have to.
I just found out. I mean, all these years I thought, you know, Paperback Writer, that riff was George Harrison. And I just read that Paul McCartney played that riff. He's the guy that plays the riff.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Paul and John they're all good guitar players. Actually, Let It Be, their last song, all three of them played solos. There's a long guitar solo section at the end Let It Be. And it's John, Paul, and George all doing solos. They did that on purpose. That was like their farewell. Like everybody did a guitar solo. Pretty cool.
That's very cool. And they're fucking gods.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I think that, I think that's probably it. But before we go, Robert, is there anything else you wanted to say or anything else you want to?
Just keep an eye out and ear out for the new single Fly.
Perfect. Right on.
Awesome, man. Thank you for being on our show. We really appreciate it. We've been really excited about this interview, and it was great to get to meet you and talk to you a little bit.
So, same here, Kilo.
Right on, man. All right.
Bob, so great to see you after all this time.
Yeah, right.
I know you.
Absolutely. Well, let's not be strangers. How about that?
Good.
All right, guys. Well, as you know, I got another deadline I got to get to, so I'm going to call it. But thank you, everyone, for joining us. Thank you so much, Robert.
Hey, man. My pleasure.
Thank you, Kilo.
Of course. Anytime, bro.
See you guys later.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, let's take a minute.